Tomorrow, legislative leaders will meet with four island pastors to discuss many issues, including same-sex marriage. But should the meeting be held in private at the state capitol? Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair joins us for today's Reality Check. Good morning.
Good morning, Pat. I almost said Patty Epler. Good morning, Beth Ann Kozlovich.
Something must be really funny today. The mouth just really isn't working over here on this end, I can tell you. Anyway.
Well, let's try. Yeah.
Let's
what
try
we're
this.
Talking about here is what's known as the fellowship meetings. Fellowship meaning Christian religious meetings. And this has been going on for years. A handful of legislators, Republicans, Democrats, both in the House and Senate, they've been holding once or twice a month during session luncheons where they get together and they discuss issues. They pray for each other. They express support. They're private. They're behind closed doors. And as I said, they've been doing this for a number of years. What's different now is they are going to extend these fellowship luncheons into the interim period. The first one is tomorrow, as you mentioned at the top. There's a few more later this summer. The reason, in part, is because a lot of lawmakers are wrestling over what to do about same-sex marriage now that Hawaii appears to be on the perhaps one of the next states as a target for same-sex marriage equality legislation.
So, Chad, what's wrong with them all choosing to get together and talk this over?
You know, I don't know. And I think there's a very good argument that, I mean, the Capitol is a public space, and this is where people come together to talk about ideas. It seems a little odd that they're doing it behind closed doors, that it is for a religious purpose. One wonders, why not meet at a church, or why not meet at someone's house to talk about this? Having said that, people come to the legislature to talk about a whole number of issues, and there's no reason people of faith should be excluded from that. I think what's particularly sensitive is there's that sort of that fine line between, well, you know, you're talking about something that's going to affect everybody regardless of their faith, regardless of whether they support same-sex marriage or not. Should you be doing this in the Capitol, a public facility, mind you, behind closed doors? I think that's a reasonable question, a separation of church and state question to at least think about.
Well, especially because it's only coming from one sector of the religious groups.
That's right. And mostly it's been evangelical pastors that have come. I know that Bishop Larry Silva from the Catholic Church has also spoken to this group. I did talk to John Bazzuno, the mm-hmm. Vice Speaker of the House. He says it's not inappropriate for this to happen. We're seeking guidance. We're seeking wisdom. I also spoke to Calvin Say, the former speaker. He said this is a personal matter, not political, but it sure seems to be kind of that fine line between the personal and the political, especially such a hot potato as same-sex marriage.
And it probably even wouldn't even be an issue that you'd consider talking about if they were holding this someplace other than at the Capitol.
Exactly.
And behind closed
exactly.
doors. All right, Chad. Sounds good. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow. We'll get it right tomorrow.
We will. Chad Blair is a political reporter for CivilBeat.com.
This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported HPR2. I'm Chris Vandercook. Coming up, Micronesian life logic plus vicious vixens and jailhouse Jezebels.
Maybe Micronesian ways don't make much sense to you, even if you're a teacher, social worker, or healthcare provider often in contact with Pacific Islanders. Father Francis Hizo believes a lot of Westerners are in exactly that place, and he'd like to help. After 5 decades serving in Micronesia, he's written a book, Making Sense of Micronesia, The Logic of Pacific Island Culture. Father Fran is in Hawaii this week as a visiting fellow at the East-West Center, and with us this morning. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Beth.
There's always the temptation when somebody is other to raise an eyebrow, regard them a little differently. Do we look at Micronesians as other somewhat differently than we've looked at other groups when they've migrated, or just in general when we consider Pacific Island culture?
I don't think that Micronesians are very much different from Samoans in essential ways. But I think we've forgotten how we've dealt with Samoans. and perhaps with how perplexed we were when the Chinese and Japanese came in. The problem is memory span. We tend to forget, you know, the problems that we had in earlier generations and focus on these things and see these as a new and different sort of a problem.
We're very much caught up in the immediacy of it, is what I'm hearing you say, plus the fact that you don't necessarily have, you know, generational memories being passed from one generation to the other, so it shouldn't be regarded as different. It's kind of like all those other migrations that you just talked about.
That's right. It is. It's. I don't see this as tremendously different. I do see the problem as a dual problem, that these Micronesians are trying to get used to a strange place, you know, as accustomed as they might be to English and to American ways. They haven't lived in a place like Hawaii or the mainland U.S. And meanwhile, the local population is trying to get used to these people who wear the funny skirts and, you know, have the shuffling walk and chew betel nut and things like that.
Wouldn't that be something, though, that you could kind of say about any culture?
Yes, and I think that's. I think the point is that we do say that about other cultures. In fact, all of us Americans have probably had the experience, you know, going back a couple generations, of tales that were told in the family about how Grandpa, you know, had his house stoned during World War I. Now, I'm German, so what I'm talking about is stories that I heard. Or how Poles or Italians, you know, suffered, or how the Irish put up with the with Irish need not apply signs during the right around the time of the Civil War in New York. We've all gone through this.
Every wave of immigrant.
Yes.
But what shall we do now, according to you? What's the prescription for dealing with our own feelings regarding others, and at this point, Micronesians?
Well, I think that what I always recommended to Peace Corps volunteers, new teachers, other people coming to Micronesia to work, was get a good friend. Get to know this person so that if anything happens, you'll never be able to stigmatize the whole culture badly. That this face will return to you, the face of your friend, and it will act as a kind of a caution against making universal negative judgments. So the first thing is that. Secondly, the friend, of course, helps in your understanding of the culture. He teaches you. I mean, I began my experience in Micronesia teaching in a boarding school, boys' boarding school, and it was conversations with people that I had that sort of helped me to appreciate how wrong some of my assumptions were.
For example, what did you find yourself challenging in your own mind?
Well, when a person tells me, this is a 14-year-old boy, tells me that he's lost his last pair of underpants, somebody stole them, and then he smiles. How am I supposed to take that? I'm enraged when I hear this thing, and I think that he should be too. But no, he smiles. Because he accepts it as a fact of life, he can't do anything about it, and because sometimes people smile when they're embarrassed. But it's little things like that, little cues like that, that you have to know, you have to pick up on. But they sometimes take years to interpret properly.
In getting to really know someone and seeing those nuances and looking at the world as much as you can, at least through somebody else's eyes, what are the lessons that you think are particularly relevant to right now in Hawaii?
Well, I think that the people here have to know that many of the migrants have arrived here in Hawaii with this high rentals, sometimes the costs that go off the charts. They're here for medical treatment. There's something like 300 Micronesians, I understand, on dialysis now. Now, that shouldn't happen, perhaps. And if the world worked properly, if the U.S. system worked properly, perhaps it wouldn't. But it's a life or death choice for them. Either their aunt or uncle dies, or they send them to Hawaii to get on this MedQuest program. And so what do we do? What would a person do? What would you do if you were the nephew or niece and had to make that kind of a decision? On the other hand, what would you do if you were a Hawaiian resident and being challenged by this influx of people needing medical treatment, and you knew that they were consuming dollars that the government needed for other things.
So how do you meet somewhere in the middle?
I don't know, but I think that the question has to be discussed, not just in terms of Hawaii's needs, but in terms of Hawaii's needs and the island's needs and the U.S. oversight on this whole situation, because after all, Micronesia is under the Compact of Free Association. And so the U.S. undertook that, that provision to allow people access to live and to work in the U.S. As a fallback, as a security option, as a way of saying that if economic development doesn't work, then we can always get the surplus population out to live productively someplace else. And that, of course, is what's happened since about 1990 or so, a few years after the compact went into effect.
But part of this stemming from what happened post-World War II.
Yes. After World War II, the claim was made that the Harry Truman, I think it was, or no, it was somebody in the Naval Department said 32,000 American casualties, 32,000 American lives. That's the casualties suffered in the retaking of the islands, which were formerly a possession of Japan, that is under the League of Nations. We will never sacrifice these islands again. Never again will they fall in the hands of someone or some power that is hostile to the U.S. That was a promise that was made.
Very briefly, though, we could have done that in the very early part of last century.
Yes, we could have done that in after the Spanish-American War, when the U.S. took Guam and was advised by Navy Department to take the other islands, but didn't.
So your overall point is, we have a very, very long history and a very long interest in Micronesia, and we need to take good interest in them now.
And that every century is a century of the Pacific, and the U.S. needs a road across the Pacific and always will.
Father Fran, thank you for coming in.
Okay,
it's
a pleasure.
Hope you enjoy your stay.
Thank you very much.
Francis Hiesel left his native New York and went to Micronesia to teach in 1963. 6 years later, he was ordained as a Jesuit priest, and in 1972 was appointed director of the Micronesian Seminar, a church-supported research institute. His most recent book, Making Sense of Micronesia, is published by the University of Hawaii Press, and Father Fran is in Hawaii this week as a visiting fellow at the East-West Center.